Hi, welcome to another segment on Focal Point. This is Stephen Thal, and I'll be your host for today's program. Today we have a really exciting guest to be with us today, as she's going to help us understand our taxes and what are some of the changes that have occurred 2023, and then possibly some changes to be aware of for 2024. A nice welcome to Judy Pollack. She's a CPA with Bengston and Smith in Farmington. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to have you and to have somebody with good guidance as we go forward with our tax years to get ready ahead of time.
Okay, so let me just talk about some of the federal tax law that applies to disabled and blind people. The standard deduction has a plus over 65 and a plus for blind people for 2023. A single standard deduction is $13,850, plus they get $1,850. Married couple, the standard deduction is $27,700, plus $1,500 for each person who's either over 65 or blind. If you're able to itemize certain things that you might be able to deduct, are what we call impairment-related work expenses that are ordinary, necessary business expenses for either attendant care at the individual place of work, as well as other expenses at the workplace that might be necessary for a person to work. Those are treated as miscellaneous itemized deductions, or if the person is self-employed, you can claim them directly on your Schedule C or Schedule F. Impairment-related expenses for amounts paid for special equipment or improvements in the home are considered medical itemized deductions. So you have to be able to itemize it and do medical itemized deductions. Certain items like cost of the Braille books, wheelchairs, guide dogs, artificial limbs, hearing aids are examples of items that could be treated as a medical itemized deductions, as well as the routine things that most people think about, out-of-pocket doctors, prescription drugs, medical premiums. Tuition paid to a special school for a child with severe learning disabilities caused by mental or physical impairments, the doctor must recommend that the child attend the school, and these are also treated as medical itemized deductions. If you have any questions, you want to go to the IRS publication 502, which gives a really detailed list of items that they allow as medical deductions. You can just go to the IRS.gov website, and then you just do a search for publication 502, and it'll pop up for you. On the federal side, there are earned income tax credits. That's for low-income people, but it can be also used for disabled taxpayers and children with a disability. The taxpayer must receive earned income, and if the person has retired on disability, the taxable benefits, sometimes disability payments can be not taxable, so it would only include the taxable benefits, can be considered earned income in order to figure out what your earned income tax credit is until they reach minimum retirement age. Earned income tax credits are not considered income for supplemental Social Security and Medicaid, so you don't have to worry about having additional income for those types of programs. The child or dependent care credit usually stops when the child hits age 13, but there is no age limit if the child is unable to care for themselves, or if you have a disabled spouse, you may be able to claim this credit as well. Connecticut earned income tax credit piggybacks off the federal amount. For 2023, they take 30.5% of the federal amount and refund it to people. And in 2024, that's going to be increased to 40% of the federal credit. The other thing that can help people with children, especially disabled children, is if perhaps you opened up a 529 plan. The 529 plan are for higher education costs, and sometimes what happens is you have either leftover monies or because your child is disabled, they don't use it in a higher education anymore. So with the 529 plan, you can convert them to an ABLE account. An ABLE account stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience, and these accounts, you can pull money from the 529 as a rollover over to these accounts, and then there's a lot of things you can use for that. The ABLE account, you can only have one ABLE account per person. So with 529 plans, you could have a parent open up a 529 plan for a child. You could have a grandparent open up a 529 plan for a child. But with an ABLE account, that child can only have one plan opened up on their behalf.
Now, is there a minimum amount you have to contribute for the 529 plan?
Most 529 plans, if you're going to do that for education, you need to see what state you have. Different states have different rules. So, like Connecticut, if you were going to take a monthly deduction from your pay, or not pay, but, you know, a monthly deduction, say, from your checking account, they would open up the plan with $25, as long as you were going to do it every month. But every state has its own minimums, so it depends on where you open up a 529 plan. They're state-driven programs, and every state in the union has their own programs and then their own minimums. And they have maximums, too, so there are some maximums different states have as well. So it works both ways.
Okay, now in the 529, you said higher education. If you have somebody that wants to do a vocational school instead of, does that count as higher education, a vocational school?
It has to be an accredited school. So as long as it's an accredited school, you should be okay with it. There, you know, you need to go look and see what the rules are, but most accredited schools are, yes, you can use them for any secondary education as long as they're an accredited school.
The other thing I wanted to mention with the state, if you're legally blind, you can approach the town to see if you can get a real estate deduction.
Right, and I was going to go after that a little bit later, so I'm just finish with the ABLE, because the ABLE has a whole lot of stuff.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Currently, you can roll over from your 529 plan, if you have one that's extra. Currently in 2024, you can roll over $18,000 for the child and create these accounts. So it's $18,000, and if they are working, they can do the $18,000 plus the amount of their part-time jobs. So there are income limits. You have to just double-check what they are. Currently, in most of the United States, it's $14,580 of earned income, but $18,000 even if you didn't work at all. What you need to do is be permanently disabled by age 26, and the individual must meet the Social Security definitions and criteria regarding functional limits and receive a letter of disability certification from a licensed doctor. These ABLE accounts can be used for education, food, housing, transportation, employment training, support, assistive technology, personal support services, health care expenses, financial management and administrative services, and any other type of expenses that improve the health, independence, and their quality of life.
Wow.
So
it
is a really nice program. The question now you have, especially if you have a disabled child, will the money you set aside in the ABLE account affect other types of stuff that you're getting? So currently under the SSI program, the SSI disregards the first $100,000 in an ABLE account. It is not treated as assets. A lot of programs, if you have assets, you get kicked out of the program. If you have money mm-hmm. set aside in an ABLE account, it doesn't count towards those limits. Medicaid programs, again, they disregard the first $100,000 in an ABLE account. So you can put away quite a bit of money for a child and not have them get kicked out of programs that they're using to help. The only thing I will say, so monies that are in an ABLE account don't affect your supplemental nutrition assistance program and your Social Security disability insurance. So, and there's assorted housing assistance programs and federal financial aid for higher education. So the money that's stuck in an ABLE account doesn't impact those as well. There is a provision that says that if your child is receiving, and I say child because they could be an adult child once you set up these ABLE accounts, they could live a long time and have all these other assistance going on. If there's money left over in an ABLE account, if they pass away, the state will claw back the monies paid on behalf of that child over their lifetime. So if you had somebody who was receiving Medicaid assistance and all of their medical bills were being paid, then if they died, anything left in the ABLE account would then get clawed back to the state. They do allow certain payments to be made from the ABLE accounts, such as funeral and burial expenses are allowed to be paid before the state claws it back, and certain other kinds of expenses are allowed to be paid out of the ABLE account if somebody passes away. So there are, it's a good program if you have it. You can fund it with just regular money. You don't have to use the 529 plan rollover. It's just that it is allowed. So if I didn't have a 529 plan for my child and my child was disabled and I knew early on that they would never go to school, I could certainly just start funding an ABLE account immediately for that child. It doesn't have to be a rollover. It can be funded outright with other money. But it's a good way if you have a 529 plan that, sometimes people will start 529 plans when the child is a baby.
Yeah.
And you may not realize they have a disability until they hit their teens. And then all of a sudden, you have a very disabled child that you now know will never go to school and never use those funds. You could then take, a 529 plan and roll it over to this ABLE account to be able to provide for that child. So just a nice feature of the 529 now being able to roll over to an ABLE account.
This is Stephen Thal, and we're interviewing Judy Pollack, who's a CPA with Bankston & Smith in Farmington, Connecticut. And we're looking over what you need to know about the 2023 taxes and also preparing for the 2024 taxes to give you a heads up. Now, are these interest-bearing accounts?
ABLE accounts are set up with any financial institution you want to use. My nephew is disabled. He had a 529 plan from his parents. They took his 529 plan and rolled it over and used Fidelity. And in Fidelity, you can invest it any way you want to. So you could use any financial institution that you want, and you can invest it pretty much any way you want to. The only limits would be the financial institution limits, if they have any. But you should be able to invest pretty much in whatever you want to invest in, if that's what you want to do. The other thing now with the 529 plan, you could either do it for your disabled child or your non-disabled child, is you can roll over a portion of the 529 plan to a Roth account for your child. There are limits based on the earned income, so you can't have a child that has no earned income. So if they work and they're disabled or not disabled, you can take some of the leftover money from a 529 plan and roll it to a Roth. Currently, in 2024, the amount is $7,000. The 529 plan must have been open for at least 15 years. Any contributions made within 5 years, you cannot roll over. So what I would say is, hey, usually your child's not going to go to school at age 20 or so. Stop making the contribution, wait 5 years, and then you can roll over whatever money's that's in there. And 529 plans must be closed by age 30. So when they're closed, if you haven't used them for education, there's penalties and taxes on the earnings on your 529 plan. So, and penalties. So penalties, taxes on the earnings on the 529 plan. So if there's a way to take unused 529 plans and roll them into something like a Roth or an ABLE account, it certainly saves on the taxes and it saves on the penalties for people. The lifetime rollover limit for the Roth, for a 529 plan to a Roth, is $35,000 in total. And then, again, for Roth or IRA distributions, because sometimes disabled people start pulling money out of their IRAs, if it's before the age of 59, the way to avoid penalties is you must be total and permanent disability, and you have to furnish proof that you can't do anything substantial, gainful activity because of your physical or mental condition, a medical determination that your condition can be expected to result in death or to be of long, continued, and indefinite duration. So you need a doctor's letter saying why it's okay to pull money out of your Roth or your IRA before age 59 and a half. Otherwise, there are penalties as well as tax on these things.
Okay.
Connecticut tax law actually had a couple of new changes, so I'll talk about those. So in 2023, for pensions, they're exempt for any married couple earning less than $100,000 and any single individual less than $75,000. Starting in but it is a firm cutoff. So if you're married, if you make $100,001, you don't get any exemption. It's fully taxable to you. If you make $99,999, it's exempt. So it's a hard cutoff rule, which is really, you know, difficult when you're trying to work with somebody to see if there's any way to reduce the adjusted gross income for people.
Mm-hmm.
In 2024, the state of Connecticut has started a phase-out, which means there's not this hard cutoff. So in 2024, the phase-out starts for a married couple at the $100,000 and ends at $150,000. So in between that $100,000 and $150,000, you will get a partial exemption for your pensions until at $150,000 it's gone altogether. IRAs starting in 2023 is 25% will be exempt for a married couple earning less than $100,000. And a single person for 75, and again, they have that hard cutoff. You go $1 over the $100,000, and none of it's exempt. If you stay $1 below it, the 25% is exempt. They also are starting a phase out in 2024. The exemption amount will be 50% in 2024, and the phase out start for a married couple at $100,000 and ends with $150,000. And then with single people, it starts at $75,000 and ends with $100,000. So I'm sure what happened is there was a lot of people complaining about that one extra dollar cost me X number of dollars more in taxes, and this was their fix in saying, okay, yeah, that really isn't fair that $1 makes that big of a difference, and they ended up instituting these phase out, but they do not start until 24. Social Security is fully exempt from Connecticut income tax if your federal, if you are single and your income is less than $75,000, married if it's less than $100,000, and then they phase, that's an automatic phase out between to a max of 25%. So the Social Security calculation does have a phase out in there, and eventually, you know, you would get to a max of 25% of your Social Security benefits being taxable. The max amount of your federal, federal has a phase in for Social Security, but a max is 85% of your Social Security benefits. Again, your Social Security for federal could be zero if your other income's fairly low, or it could be as high as 85% if your income's fairly high. And then federal has a phase out. And then starting in 2024, Connecticut has reduced its two lowest margin rates. And we talked about the increase in the earned income credits. Now, the other thing I wanted to kind of go over with is property tax relief. There's an assortment of items, and your best bet always is to call the town and talk to them. some of the things that are available for property tax relief. There are exemptions, which is a reduction of the property tax value, and there are credits, which reduce the tax itself. So exemptions and credits are, you know, the two things that property tax forms do. They, most towns will give you an exemption if you're disabled. They'll ask qualifying homeowners, and it's $100,000 of property tax exemption, meaning your mill rate is based on less than, you know, less than $100,000 less. You must qualify. You must be totally disabled under Social Security or federal or state or local government retirement plans. So if you have a disability, call the property tax town, call the town, and then ask them for the paperwork you need to fill out for this. There are exemptions for blind people, and they have a $3,000 property tax exemption. So if your house is worth $103,000, it tax you only on the $100,000 on the house times the mill rate. So it's an exemption. There are sorted exemptions for veterans or disabled veterans. So again, talk to your town, call them and say, I'm a veteran, what do you got? I'm a disabled veteran, what do you got? And then see what kinds of forms they can send you. Quite a few of the towns have for senior citizens, which they define as anybody over 65 years old. Each town sets its own income limits and exemption levels. And again, you need to contact the local towns to see what's available for you. Some towns have something what they call tax freezes as well. But what that does is if you are currently paying $100 on your bill, and next year it's $105, you'll still only pay the $100. The $5 gets added to a lien on your property. So it's really like a cash flow management versus any real benefit. It just helps you that currently you don't have to pay them, but once you sell the house, they will get paid back. But again, if that's something that might help, certainly give them a call again, and they'll give you the correct forms for them. There is an exemption for retrofitted handicapped vehicles. So if you have an existing van that you put a wheelchair lift, that's considered a retrofitted vehicle. Maybe you put in one of those seats in the front where, you know, it like swings out and comes down and comes back in. It's a retrofitted to help a handicapped person get in the vehicle. Any of that kinds of stuff will make the vehicle exempt. Again, you need to get the form from the town, and you're going to need to file all of these exemptions need to be filed annually. It's not file it once and forget about it. Every year, you need to go to the town, get the forms, and file it out. There's a brand new one that just recently got passed by the state legislature, and it's a credit, so different than an exemption. And it's called Homeowners Elderly Disabled Circuit Breaker Tax Relief Program. Hmm. And it provides a tax property tax credit for people 65 and over or totally disabled, and the annual incomes do not exceed certain limits. The limits kind of are fluctuate, but for a married person, when the income reaches $54,400 and it includes Social Security, so it includes your non-taxable Social Security, you don't get it anymore. And for single people, it's $43,800 for 2023. The credits are could be up to $1,250. They do, again, phase out depending on your income levels. And then for a single person, it's $1,000 of credit that's available. And they do have like a graduated income scale. So you might get the full amount or you might not get any or very little depending on where your income ends up landing.
Right.
So those were the things I wanted to talk about. So if you have any other questions, you could ask me.
Getting back to some of the things for the town, you got to make sure you have documentation for these, right? The veterans.
Yes. The town would tell you what they need. Most towns will want a copy of your income tax return. So you might say, oh, but but I don't file my income tax return anymore because my income's so low. The town's going to want you to file it. I would suggest if you have no income because your income's so low, go to, like, most towns will have for seniors a free clinic for tax returns that they'll, you know, fill out your tax return for you for free. I would suggest using something like that so you can show them that, yes, I filed my tax return. I have no tax due because my income is so low, but I do have Social Security. Most towns will not want a copy of your Social Security statement. I have people all the time calling me and saying, well, I tried giving them my Social Security statement, and they don't want it. What they want is an income tax return, and you need to have one filled out, even though you might not owe any taxes. And it can be expensive if you use an accountant. I'm an accountant, and I know what I have to charge people for my time. And so that's why I suggest, you know, some of the towns will do, like, a free clinic for the seniors to get their tax returns done.
Usually
so you
that's
might want
in
to
the senior centers.
That, like that.
Yeah. Can check with
at the senior center. Call them, see what they got. And especially if you have a really simple return, then you can have the return, and then you can bring it to the town. But most towns do want a copy of that. I'm not sure what else they need. If you're disabled or blind, they're probably going to want something from the doctor describing the blindness or the disability. But most towns want to help you. So, again, you know, call the town the assessor's office and just see, you know, what kind of forms you can get from them. Try to describe what you were looking for. Say, I'm disabled, I'm blind. What kind of exemptions can I get for my house? I have a van that I fixed. What's the form I need to get an exemption for my car, and that kind of stuff. So you want to, you know, talk to them and see what they have. If you're a veteran, definitely call them. There's different programs available for veterans or disabled veterans. Call the town and say, I'm a veteran. I own a house. You know, what kinds of, you know, exemptions do you have for someone like me? And they'll have to give you the forms, and they'll tell you what they need from you.
Okay, that's good. As we begin to prepare our statements for 2023 taxes, are there any suggestions you can offer to people on how to organize their material? Because I have heard of some people, everything's in a bag, and they give it to the accountant.
The problem about putting it in a paper bag and giving it to me, I have to charge you by the amount of time I spend trying to sort through what you've given me. So anything you can do to organize it is good. If you have, you know, what I'll have sometimes people do is they'll get a 1099 dividend form, and then they give me the backup checks for the dividends that they received. I don't need the backup checks. I just need the 1099 dividend form. If you're making me flip through papers, it's just going to cost you more in accounting fees for me to flip through papers I don't need. So I would suggest if you have the 1099, that's the thing you want to give your accountant. The only thing that you might want to give them is something that you don't have a 1099 for, so it tends to be itemized deductions. If you have the backup, what I want is just a list of the items. I don't necessarily need to see all the slips that, you know, comprise of the backup. If you give me all the slips, it means I need to flip through them. I need to try to add them. So even if you put it on a piece of paper and write things down, so even if I have to add up the sheet that's on the list of, on the paper, it's easier than me trying to flip through all the pages. A lot of CVS's and Walgreens will give you a year-end list for all the prescription drugs paid. Right. The problem you have with seniors is some of they do drugs online, and usually the last statement you get will show you how much you paid for those prescriptions online. So again, that last statement would work. Prescription drugs, ask your local CVS, Walgreens, whoever you use, for the year-to-date statement for that stuff. If you have a doctor that you visit a lot, they might have a year-to-date statement for you as well. But it includes things like I said, prescription drugs, copays of any kind, medical premiums, eyeglasses, hearing aids, So there's a lot of medical expenses that can be taken if you can itemize. In my practice, I find it really, really difficult for married people to itemize. It's just the way it works with the tax law. Sometimes with individuals, I have more of a shot if somebody, if they're a single person, to itemize than I do with a married couple. But again, try to organize what you give. Do not give the paper bag, because then the accountant has to charge you for the time spent flipping through all those papers and trying to figure out what I need, what I don't need. You know, if you're not sure, then, you know, just be aware that if you give the accountant a paper bag, it's going to increase the fee that they're going to charge you for doing your tax return.
What about doing volunteer work? Does any of that count if you're itemizing?
Okay, with volunteer work, the deductions you get for volunteer work are mileage, and also for medical, you can take medical miles as well, and any kind of out-of-pocket expenses that you incurred, not time. Time is never considered a deduction, never.
Okay, well, we want to thank you for the most important information. It's great. I learned a few things myself, and you want to leave a phone number for folks if they have any questions for you?
Sure. My phone number here is 860-678-5160, Judy Pollack.
Okay, thank you very much. We wish you a very wonderful new year, and I know the tax season's starting, so people should make their appointments as soon as possible. Thank you for all you do for all your clients, but also for helping us get a greater understanding and appreciation of the tax. You're taking the confusion out.
All right.
So we wish you well, and hope you have a wonderful year coming up. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you. You guys too. Bye-bye.
Stephen Thal with another segment on Focal Point. We hope that you enjoyed today's program. And if you have any questions, please call Judy Pollack at 860-678-5160. I want to remind everybody to please wear your sunglasses and wear a hat, because the sun is very sharp out there. And finally, develop an emergency plan wherever you work or live, and then practice it or work with the company or wherever you are to make sure they practice the plan. So if something happens, you know what to do. And when traveling, make sure that you go to places where there's two ways to get out of a building. Thank you again for listening. Stay well.